Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because Santa brought Jamie back for our holiday show, this is MuggleCast episode 125 for December 23rd, 2007.
The holidays are upon us this week, and Jamie's back finally!
Hey, guys and girls. And
why are you talking in such a deep voice?
Well, because I haven't been here for so long, my voice has broken again.
Which I've just disproven because I started talking in my normal voice, so that's a good start.
Jamie, it's been a while. A lot of people have missed you.
It's been a while. I've missed everyone and the show, and I've missed everything. It's been a tough semester, that's why. And my internet there is awful. Seriously, I can't even tell you how bad it is. It's very fast. I can download it like 3 megs a second, which, by the way, is awesome. However, BitTorrent doesn't work, which is dreadful. And the internet sucks anyway. I'm very, very pleased to be back. Very pleased to be back.
But this isn't really the best time for you to come back. I mean, because, like, you know, we're in this holiday season you're not really a fan of.
No, I'm not a fan of this holiday season. I hate commercialization. Matt, do you agree?
I usually just fast forward through the commercials.
No. I mean, like, Christmas now is just so... All you see on TV is, you know, treat your family this Christmas. And it's like, oh, wow, you know, Christmas is in a week. I should really get buying stuff. But then you remember that it happens next year, and the year after, and the year after that, and the year after that. And, oh, wow, I don't have to do anything special this year. And once you realize that, you realize it's just another day.
They should portray someone who's poor and depressed.
Help someone out.
Well, we got a great show for everyone today. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Micah Tannenbaum's in the MuggleCast News Center with past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. Time Magazine has announced its top people of 2007, and J.K. Rowling made the list at number 3, behind Vladimir Putin and Al Gore. The article features some new quotes from the author saying, "There have been times since finishing Weak Moments," she says, "when I've said, yeah, all right, to the 8th novel," but she's convinced she's doing the right thing to take some time away, do something else. She's working on 2 projects now, an adult novel and a political fairy tale. If, and it's a big if, I ever write an 8th book about the wizarding world, I doubt that Harry would be the central character, she says. I feel like I've already told his story, but these are big ifs. Let's give it 10 years and see how we feel then. CBBC Newsround has revealed information about casting for the following Hogwarts student roles in the upcoming Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Cormac McLaggen will be played by Freddie Stroma, Blaise Zabini by Louis Cordyce, Romilda Vane by Anna Schaffer, Katie Bell by Georgina Leonidas, Leanne, Katie Bell's friend, by Isabella Loughlin, and Marcus Belby by Robert Knox. All the actors and actresses are relative newcomers, so not much is known about them at the moment. We will update you as information is released. The film is set to be shown in theaters on November 21st, 2008. ITV has sent MuggleNet 2 preview clips of the J.K. Rowling documentary J.K. Rowling, A Year in the Life, which will air on December 30th on ITV1 at 7 p.m., lasting 1 hour. MSN has released its Most Influential Women list for the year 2007, and Jo Rowling made the cut. Notably, she was the only author featured. MSN writes, Rowling's Wizarding World has not so much influenced modern culture as grown deep roots into the heart of it. Rowling's epic fantasy series has made a lasting impact on, well, just about all of us. J.K. Rowling updated her official website earlier this week with a new news entry, FAQ, and Fansite Award. In her news update, Jo reflects on her experience watching the bids climb for the 7th copy of The Tales of Beedle the Bard. She said, "It is fortunate that nobody was filming my reaction while the bids climbed higher and higher. Fitty, Angela, Christine, and I were sitting around Fitty's laptop in our office, the aforementioned being my PA and the invaluable assistants who deal with the post bag, watching a live link to Sotheby's. Once the amount hit a million, I kept swearing loudly." See, I knew she had this side in her. "With every successive bid, and when we reached the final amount, the air turned a lovely shade of blue." Finally, Yahoo recently released some of their year-end awards, with the Harry Potter series grabbing various honors. Emma Watson came in at number 3 and Dan Radcliffe at number 10 on the list of the 10 most popular stars of 2007. Order of the Phoenix was named one of the 10 most popular movies of the year, claiming the number 5 spot, and the trailer for the 5th Harry Potter film ranked at number 4 in the category of 10 most popular trailers of 2007. That is all the news for this December 23rd, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Happy holidays and back to the show.
All right. Thank you, Micah. Hey, we have some news to go over this week. Some good news. WB has made some more casting announcements for Cormac McLaggen, Blaise Sabini, Romilda Vane, Katie Bell, Leanne, Katie Bell's best friend, and Marcus Belby. But the thing about these casting announcements is that these are all no names.
Yeah.
They really don't have a name.
Who's
for themselves.
Leanne?
Oh, come on, Laura. She's Harry Potter knowledge. Oh, my God.
It's Katie Bell's best friend.
Hello.
I don't remember.
She's the one who's friends with Katie Bell.
No, but I mean, really.
Matt,
I don't remember this character.
Yeah, remember when Katie got hold of one of the cursed objects and she went out crying out?
I thought Elise Bennett was Katie Bell's
guys,
best friend.
This term... terminology is so unspecific. Remember when in that place, Katie Bell?
Well, wait, is Matt being serious? Are you being serious, Matt?
Of course I'm being serious.
Of course I'm being serious.
What's happened to you guys since I've been gone?
Well, that's pretty good because I can't remember Katie Bell's best friend.
What's happened to you all? Do you even remember what we're talking about? What this podcast about?
Oh, whatever, Jamie. Whatever.
I'm disappointed.
It's a Harry Potter podcast.
Shut up, Jamie. You don't remember either.
I do. I can tell you everything about that. Everything, Matt. Everything. Shall
Jamie,
I?
You haven't been on in 10 billion years. You don't remember anything.
Oh, okay, fine. Laura, Leanne is her friend. When they were in Hogsmeade and she got given the necklace, Matthew.
Well, I knew it was a necklace. I didn't want to say it was a Horcrux, so I didn't think it was. I didn't know what it was called.
So we do know who she is. But anyway, back to the point. I mean, these aren't really any... none of these actors we know, so it's sort of disappointing. We can't really talk about them.
I think it's nice, though, they actually casted an actual Katie Bell, though.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a positive confirmation.
It's kind of nice to have unknowns as well, because, you know, I find it extremely hard to untypecast actors and actresses, yeah. Especially, you know, for these kind of roles. So if it's a famous person, and they play basically a character who doesn't really matter, like...
And it's Ronaldo cheaper. Vane.
I know that's mean, but I don't mean it like that. I just mean, like, you know, a character who isn't a main character.
Right. And I think we've seen that through Ivana, who came out of nowhere and did a fantastic job, that, you know, they can pick some really good no-names, so to speak, and create some great portrayals.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it's nice to see some untapped talent come into the limelight as well. So, it's good to see. But wait a minute, Andrew. Isn't Zabini... his first name? Isn't Blaise his second name? Oh. Well done. I was testing you after 10 weeks. Both of you are still very, very good. Well done. 10 out of 10.
In some other news, J.K. Rowling was not named Times Person of the Year. She was the second runner-up, coming behind Vladimir Putin.
Who looks like Dobby.
And number 2, Al Gore.
Who doesn't look like Dobby.
Um, What do you guys think of this? There's been already been some controversy over Vladimir Putin being named the Time Person of the Year. Someone described it as disgusting. I forget who, but I saw it on CNN.
Well,
you heard it here first, guys.
It's not necessarily the person who had the best influence, I suppose. I think it's just the person who had the most influence.
What's it ranked on?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's sort of... There's quite a mix of people there. You know, a head of state... What's Al Gore now? Is he like a vice president, or is he?
No, he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
He's been recognized a lot for his work against global warming.
I see.
So he's been very adamant on that. So yeah, I could definitely see him being
and then Joe
the person of the year.
That's pretty cool.
Joe, I guess that's pretty good. Yeah,
yeah. But
coming behind the guy who stopped global warming
then,
or is trying to stop it.
We have to remember that Time also voted Hitler their person of the year. So.
Oh,
not
right.
Too sure about that.
That's true. I think they did this just to create controversy.
You were a front runner, Andrew, but they decided against you in the end.
Oh no! Last year it was me, and it was you.
Oh yes! Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that was it. Yeah.
We were all Time's Person of the Year.
Time Person of the Year.
Yeah. In other news, Amazon has posted all 5 reviews for the 5 tales in Beetle the Bard. I don't know if you guys have read these yet, but Amazon did a really good job reviewing these tales. And they give you a good look at what J.K. Rowling has written in Beetle the Bard. And I was really impressed. I mean, these are just like classic fairy tales. And they're so clever. They're so fun. They're so just witty and... delectable. I just love them. have you guys read these reviews?
Yeah, I read. I paid particularly close attention to the one about the three brothers, and I just thought it was really cool because, like, you hear a little bit about it in the book, but I think you get a better perspective on what exactly went on with that when you read the Amazon review.
Yeah,
yeah.
I haven't. I had a quick look, but the thing that gets me about this is I always think it's funny when, like, a corporation buys something, because I imagine, you know, Amazon to be this huge, daunting giant made up of everyone
right.
from Amazon putting
right.
in a bid for this thing, because it's quite weird. So who actually reviewed it? Was it, like, the head of Amazon, or did every employee... write, like, one word?
Well, I'm looking at the Beetle the Bard page right now, and at the end of the intro, it's signed Daphne Durham. So I'm assuming it's that girl who did it. I think it was just one reviewer. It must, you know, it had to be a really big Harry Potter fan
of
Amazon.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And overall, I think it's pretty cool. I think they've done a really good job. This is definitely a fantastic person to own this, because otherwise, if it was some random guy... bidding for this book, we never would have heard more
exactly.
about these tales.
Yeah.
And I assume Joe's happy about it, having the reviews out there. I mean, that's a fit. I don't know.
It's pretty cool, though.
I think it's cool that
they're taking it on tour and stuff so that people can see it.
Yeah.
Right. I emailed them asking if they had any details about the tour, and they said it's all very early in the planning stages. I also asked them about whether or not they would be... taking it to England, back to England, because I assume it's going to be in the United States, mostly. So, they said they don't know
yet. I emailed them, too,
They gave me... What?
I emailed them, too, and said, can I have it? And they said, no.
Nice try. Yeah, you and 50,000 other people. Did you mention you were from MuggleCast? That would have helped.
Yes, I did. And they said, especially no.
Wow. Jeez. That's so mean.
Yeah, they are.
And lastly... probably one of the coolest things this week. ITV released a preview of their J.K. Rowling documentary. And the clip was released to just a couple of fan sites. And it shows Joe finishing the book. It's really
cool. It is cool.
This, I mean, it was pretty funny seeing this. Because, of course, Joe's in the Balmoral Hotel. And they have some shots of Joe typing on her laptop. And she's got a pack of Orbitz gum there, and she's got a cup of tea with her lipstick on it. It's very funny. And
most people put the lipstick on their lips, but fair play to her.
Well, usually when you drink the tea or
the coffee,
it transforms.
Yeah. I bet you that camera guy was like, while she was writing, he was establishing the shot. He was moving her teacup to just the right position.
Yeah, definitely.
And saying, oh, Joe... this Orbit gum is not wrapped properly. I'm going to redo it for you.
Isn't it a bit weird when you think back on it? Like, when she posted on her site talking about ending the book, and at the time, we thought she was just alone. in her hotel room, and now knowing that there was a camera crew there, it's just weird.
I could not write with a camera on me because it's a very interactive experience, isn't it? Like, you might swear, you might, you know, scratch parts of you that you don't want to appear on camera. You might, you know, stretch and, you know, you might go for a shower or something. You might do stuff that you don't want to be on camera. That must be weird to finish the book.
I'd be sitting there naked.
Oh, is that how you write? Naked?
Yeah. Well, I don't write much, but when I do. When I was watching this, I was thinking, you know, if I was Joan, I was in there, I wouldn't be able to concentrate properly while writing the final
book.
Yeah.
Like, I would almost half-ass it just so I could start talking to him more just to get it done.
Yeah, exactly. And does, like, the cameraman, you know, talk to her? Because after 2 hours of
once
silence...
Once she says she's finished, she says...
Just kidding.
You know, they're like, good job, Joe. And she's like... Yeah. She's like, well, you haven't read it
yet. Shut up.
But, high fives.
The only thing that got me was that she was just sitting there on her laptop in Microsoft Word writing the final book. I would think they had, like, you know, Joe would have her own special app for writing, like, Harry Potter.
And, like, eight... Mm-hmm. Uninterrupted power supplies just in case one goes down and then the next goes down and then the third goes down. And Word, Andrew, what does she save it as? Book 7.
Oh my god. Oh, I must know. Like, how big is that Google document?
Imagine if she lost it. Oh my god.
Imagine if she accidentally was attaching a file to someone in an email.
Oh my god.
She accidentally sends the book. And it's like to some tablet or something. Wow, a lot could go wrong there. I wonder if she has that laptop password.
She must. Yeah. Harry Potter rocks his password, I hear.
Password's like MuggleNet 4.
That's funny. But yeah, Word.
She can type pretty fast, too.
Windows laptop.
Yeah, she can type pretty fast. She was a good type. Very disappointed to see she wasn't using a Mac.
That is a bit bad.
Yeah. I mean, if you're really concerned about, you know, you've got this huge book on your computer, I'd be very concerned to be writing that on a PC.
Me too.
Yeah, I wouldn't want a virus to pick it up. But anyway, can anyone tell what part of the book she's writing here? I'm reading, it says, "A hollow tree," said Harry. "What tree? Where were you?" "A forest in Azkaban," she sighed. Apparently,
that's not in the books, is it? That must be a rewrite of it.
No, wasn't that when he was talking to the ghost of Rowena Ravenclaw's daughter?
Oh. Well done, Laura. Second test. Oh. You passed with flying colors.
You told Tom Riddle, didn't you? His eyelashes flattened beneath his gaze.
Yeah.
Something like that. Let's move on to some announcements now. First up, happy birthday to Laura. Laura celebrated her birthday on Wednesday.
How old are you, Laura?
19. I feel so old.
Yeah, Do you know how old I just turned?
21, Jamie.
21, Laura. Don't feel old yet.
I knew you were going to say that. You're old, Laura. You're old. I'm 21. It's just like last year. You were like, I'm turning 20. Oh, my God.
Well, stop saying that you're old then. Stop saying you're old, because you're not. You're fine. You have literally a couple more years. After you turn 21, you can complain.
Okay. I'll do that.
Even though I've been complaining since I was 16.
One other thing we just wanted to mention today was, of course... We've gotten a lot of reaction in terms of our announcement that we are going to be ending the show. Laura and Jamie, do you want to throw your 2 cents into the hat?
We're ending the show?
Yeah, we're ending the show.
Oh, my God. I have to go start sending out applications. I need a new job.
Actually, guys, it was a big joke.
Yeah. April Fool's early.
Oh, April Fool's. So mean, you guys. We can't do that.
That would be terrible. No, we are dead serious.
We are serious.
You guys want to add your input to this?
I would say that if you listen to it carefully, we're not actually ending it. We are just stopping doing weekly shows. So we're changing the format, basically. We don't know what we're going to do, but it's not going to be the end of MuggleCast. It's just going to be a significant change to how we do things, the biggest change since we started in August 2005.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's not like 16 more episodes and then the line is cut, the guillotine goes, and my broadcast is over. We're just changing it, and we're not going to be putting out weekly episodes with exactly the same format. So the candle will still burn. It's just going to be a bit shorter, that's all.
Right. Some people have suggested we do a monthly show, which I wouldn't be totally against. I mean, I think we would have enough to talk about month.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I think that's something we can consider. It just, a lot of it depends on how much is left come April. I mean, we're going to be done with our Book 7 discussion. Really, all that'll be left to discuss will be news at that point. And movies, of course. I mean, there's no reason why we wouldn't do special shows to cover movies or conventions or anything like that. But I really, and I feel so bad because we've gotten so many emails, and there's even a Facebook group now trying to get us to not stop weekly shows. But honestly, you guys, I promise you, you would rather us stop while we're still ahead than keep doing shows 5 years from now and bringing up these contrived points that you've heard 10 times before.
But we've all agreed that if we get 7 billion signatures in the Facebook group, we'll start doing daily shows. So, guys, tell your friends. Brilliant. Tell your friends.
And everyone has to keep in mind, you know, it is, we're running it in April. It's pretty far away. I mean, some people are acting like, you know, the end is now. We're dead. No, but I mean, we still have 4 months to go. That's still a long time. I mean, you know, just thinking ahead to April feels like a while from now. So don't, if I have to say anything to the listeners, it's this. Just don't, please, lose faith in us. Don't give up on us just because we're ending the show. I mean, you know, we're still going to make these shows as good as they've ever been, and we're working on some things to make the show even better. But just don't give up on us, please. Keep listening.
Yeah.
at least till April. I mean, come on.
And also, what I'd say is, you guys don't mind if I say this, but I hope. But, you know, this is just one. Hopefully, this will just be one podcast, and we hope to do something else as well at some point.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you know, we said that on last week's show. We would like to start a new project.
So, MuggleCast is just going to change, basically, considerably. So please stay with us.
Yes.
Please stay with us.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was thinking...
Don't get...
Good.
Oh, sorry. I'm just saying, don't get too hostile. Because I'm starting to read some of the comments, and
yeah, some of them are pretty depressing. I mean, we realize, you know, it makes us so happy to hear how big of an impact MuggleCast has had in your lives, and really that's the most flattering and thing I've ever heard, and we're so glad to hear it's made that difference. But you know, at the same time, we do have to move on at some point, and as we keep saying, it's not going to be the final MuggleCast. We're still going to do them. I think we should do, after we end in April, we should start calling the shows MuggleCast Update or something like that, sort of to separate these shows in April from the ones that we've done in the past. So at least we know that MuggleCast was always a huge success, no matter how many downloads MuggleCast Update gets.
That's an awful name, Andrew.
What, MuggleCast Update? Yeah.
It's
all right, we'll come up with something better. It's just an idea.
I don't know. That was pretty creative. I mean, how long did it take you to create that one?
5 minutes.
Well, that's not surprising. Sorry. No, I mean, it's a very good name. I don't like it.
Okay. And, you know, as this is our holiday show, Matt suggested this a couple of weeks ago. We should talk about things that happened a year ago that week.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened to our episode a year ago this Christmas. And we were what was the big news then? Don't look at the show schedule.
How could we not remember what the big news was?
Let me scroll up.
Honestly, I forgot. It's all a blur to me.
Oh my gosh.
The title of the Book 7 was released right before Christmas. And we didn't even talk about it. It wasn't even really a holiday show. We were saved by the bell because Joe made that announcement. So we just discussed the title that whole time. That was a very good show we did.
It was. It's really weird. Like, you think back on all the things we thought the Deathly Hallows were. And
yeah, I know. Right.
It was. We weren't even close.
The thing is, though, if you think it was there all along, if you read Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and look about invisibility cloaks, you know, Harry's invisibility cloak is special, and I guess it's kind of weird we didn't notice. Although, of course, you can say everything in hindsight, and actually, that's not true at all because it's very well hidden.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. But it's cool.
And then the other thing that was made a year ago was our final announcement to sell MuggleCast T-shirts, which I thought was kind of fun because it feels like such a long time ago.
It does.
Maybe we'll try to do it again.
But it's fine, Andrew, because we can start doing MuggleCast Update T-shirts, which are going to be all the rage, I tell you.
Oh, come on. I thought it was good.
Get your MuggleCast Update T-shirts here.
Today.
Today. Well.
All right, let's move on to some Muggle Mail now. Jamie, we renamed to listen. Well, I renamed Listener Rebuttals Muggle Mail. What do you think of
I
that?
I like that. No, no, that? I think that's yeah. awesome because okay, they weren't always rebuttals, were they? No, no, I really, right. really like that.
All right,
so,
good.
But I'm glad. Since this is really sort of an add-on to the previous Muggle Mail, shouldn't this be like Muggle Mail Update or like something like
Shut
that?
Shut up. Anyway, first piece of mail comes from Danielle. She writes in response to my DVD problems last week. She says, my order of the Phoenix DVD from Walmart is screwed up too. I thought it was just my TV, but I watched it on my friend's plasma, and it was even worse. When he mentioned that the problem was during the first half hour and the last 15 minutes, I couldn't believe it because that's exactly what mine, when mine has the issue. Just wanted to let you know, it's just not you.
It's because you got it at Walmart. I meant to, that's why.
Yeah. I meant to prepare for this on the show, but maybe next week for the New Year show, we'll call WB on the air and see if I can complain and get some results.
Imagine doing a recall of 100 million DVDs.
That would be so
They'll probably
expensive.
Just tell us to replace it, but yeah. next week we'll do that.
One you more. Should have all went to Target, though. I mean, Target's the best.
I know. Yeah,
well, right, Laura?
Another email from the DVD about the DVD comes from Emily. She writes, I was just listening to episode 124 when you were discussing the new Order of the Phoenix DVD. I also had a problem with my DVD. I bought the two-disc special edition, and instead of one DVD with the movie and one with special features, I got two DVDs with the same movie. Since finding out about the problem, my mom and I have returned to Walmart and gotten another copy. There's no problem with the
See,
second
Walmart
copy.
Again. I'm telling you guys. Bad employment practices. This is what mm-hmm. happens.
Well, I mean, I don't Rolling. Know if it's the employees
no, no,
at Walmart.
No, no.
The
I'm
fine
saying
employees
they're a crappy
at Walmart.
Company.
Oh, that's mean.
They are.
I'm sorry to all you listeners out there who do work at Walmart.
Potential libel suit there as well, Laura. You got to be careful.
Yeah, jeez.
But if you prefix it with the word allegedly, you're fine. Allegedly.
Don't say that because nobody likes onions or accuses again.
No, okay, okay. I didn't get that from there. I got it from the show Have I Got News For You, which is a UK like satirical.
So they got it from
them. So they probably got it from them, yeah. Everything's copied nowadays, Andrew. Nothing's original.
I know.
You know, like, everything's been done before. It's just done in a different way.
Yeah.
Our next Muggle Mail update comes from Asa Anderson, 35, of Sweden. She says, hi there. I realize that I'm a week too late, but I simply have to ask you guys about this from the Seven Potters. When the Seven Potters changed clothes in the Dursley's kitchen, Ron remarks to Harry that, I knew Ginny was lying about that tattoo as he looks down at his bare chest. I just want to know, how likely is it that Ron never would have seen Harry's bare chest after 6 years in the same dormitory? And changes in the Quidditch changing room on top
Jesus.
Of that. It seems less likely that Ginny would have seen it, though I suppose it is possible.
Okay, this is a PG-13 podcast. I think we should ignore this one piece of mail.
I think that's a fair question. Unless they use their magic to change their clothes without ever becoming naked.
Well, they don't wash either. You know, and they don't do anything.
Or go to the bathroom.
Or go to the bathroom. So it's like anything
that's
could have
true.
Happened. I guess
Ryan
you know,
been
he
joking.
Huh? Yeah, and he could have got a tattoo as well. Like, he could have gone to the Hogwarts tattoo parlor at some point.
Or maybe they were just lying about where the location was.
Exactly,
tattoo.
Yeah. Exactly.
It could be elsewhere.
Anyway.
I don't know about you girls, but I can't wait to see that scene in the movie.
Me too. I'm so excited.
next email. I wonder how they're going to do that in the movie. That is going to take so much work on Dan's half.
He's not going to take half of the credit.
Yeah.
He's not even going to do half the work. He's just going to just
Isn't
say,
that
I
a
love
really
magic
just inherently awkward scene, though, you think about it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, what I mean is it's going to be a lot of work to film.
Oh, definitely.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Seven. Just filming him seven times doing all different things and then, like, putting all this together. I cannot wait to see how they do that. I hope they do a special look on that.
That will be interesting. That will be so interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Although just scout the world for six very, very good lookalikes.
They might, yeah.
Yeah. Our next email comes from Kenneth Logan Jr., 20, from Hampton, Virginia. He writes, I don't know about y'all, but when I first saw the chapter title, I immediately thought of the Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End scene where Jack Sparrow hallucinates on his ship in Davy Jones' locker and sees multiple Jacks. I thought Harry was going crazy or something.
I put that email in there for you, Jamie.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, yeah, well, in the 8th book, Harry becomes an alcoholic and starts drinking rum like there's no tomorrow right now. Then, you know, he starts hallucinating. But no, that's very interesting. It was a very clever plan, but I just think with magic, there's got to be some other way of transporting people. Like, without magic, you can, like, you know, there are ways to get people to places, and this is turning into some kind of conspiracy theory, but there are ways to, you know, to sort of bring people to different places secretly. But then I thought...
Like what?
Well, Laura, it's a secret. That's why, you know, no one knows. But, like, Delta Force and the Navy SEALs, SAS, I'm sure have ways. But I just mean, like... But then magic cancels that out, because if one side can do it, then the other side can do it as well. So it just becomes, you know, hard still. But it was a good plan. But... I just don't know. Surely they could have mixed everything up. Like, it's like everyone puts their wands into a pot, and then they pull out wands, and each person turns into that person. So everyone's different. So they can't possibly tell who's who. So you have like two Moody's, four Kingsleys, eight Harrys. You know. So
yeah. Do they even have to multiply Harry?
Well,
just Harry take someone else's Polyjuice potion?
Exactly. Yeah. And then they could have. He could have been anyone. Absolutely. Anyone.
Yeah.
Or they could have... what I don't understand is why they don't teach him to be an animagus.
Animagus.
Yeah, and then his thing is like a single-celled organism. So no one can see him unless Voldemort carries around a microscope.
Mm-hmm. They could lose him, though.
Well, I was questioning about that chapter... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying they could lose him very easily.
they could.
You get back to the Burrow, and it's like he doesn't change back, and they're like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, whoops.
That would suck.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. That's very funny. You know, there's one more story I forgot to put in the news here, and I think it's worth noting. Well, we did talk about J.K.'s Times second runner-up person of the year, but there's a new little interview with her in this article, and let me quote what she said. "There have been times since finishing, weak moments, when I've said, yeah, all right, to the 8th novel. If it's a big if, I ever write an 8th book about the Wizarding World, I doubt that Harry would be the central character. I feel like I've already told his story, but these are big ifs. Let's give it 10 years and see how we feel then." To me, it seems like Jo is leaving it a lot more open than she has in the past.
There's so much more she can write, though. Like, there really is.
I know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, yeah, why didn't she write about James Potter and Elder's Crossing? Isn't that the new one?
Right.
Yeah.
Or like Snape's story.
Yeah.
Or something.
There's so much. Yeah. There really is.
Absolutely.
Or even Dumbledore and Grindelwald. You know,
that would be so
the Tale
cool.
of well, Lost that, Lovers or something.
That would be the NC-17 book, Matt. But
that would be a romance novel.
That would be the romance novel.
I would love...
Seriously. Two very muscular wizards in one of those romantic novel covers just holding each other.
Yeah.
That would be... Oh, yeah.
And their hair...
Grindelwald looked at Albus. Albus looked at Grindelwald. Albus and Grindelwald looked at each other. Wow. I might write it.
It just seems like, you know, it was left open more than we've heard her say in the past.
It was, yeah.
We'll see. Alright, let's move on to chapter by chapter now. This week we have chapter 5, Fallen Warrior, and also chapter 6, Ghoul in Pajamas. We're going to start doing 2 chapters a week now to wrap things up by April. So we're going to make one minor change. We're just going to highlight the top 3 events in each chapter rather than the top 5. Other than that, everything else is still the same. So we'll start off with Fallen Warrior, and this is the chapter where everyone arrives at the Burrow, and Harry and the rest of them all anxiously await each new pair to arrive at the Burrow. So, first of all, when you're reading this chapter, it's set up very well, because it begins, the chapter title is called Fallen Warrior, so the readers know that somebody is going to die.
Yes.
But at the same time, what's great about this chapter is that you are waiting along with everyone else. And although they don't know who is going to die, they feel like someone may, because it was a dangerous journey, and they seem to be set on believing that something is going to happen. So the whole time we're waiting and we're following, we are with the characters.
Well, you're also left at the end of the chapter thinking that probably Hagrid died anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was either Hagrid or even Hedwig.
Because
Hedwig was devastating.
Yeah. Well, he was already dead.
I know, but...
Well, it's a she.
She,
for one.
Sorry.
There you go.
I was mortified when I read that. I couldn't believe it. I was so upset. But Hedwig died. Oh, my God.
Laura, you got to see the bigger picture. She's just an owl. I know, you know, obviously she's an important character, and obviously the symbolism of the pureness and the whiteness is very important, and it shows something dear to Harry, but, you know...
But then he, like...
She's just an owl.
Didn't he kind of, like, blow her up on accident after she died, too?
Yeah, he did,
yeah.
Wow, that's gotta
suck. Well, if it makes you feel better, yeah. Laura, she didn't feel a thing.
Yeah. But can you imagine blowing up your pet?
It was closure, though. It was closure. He'd still see her, and he was like, she's gotta go. She's got to
that's go. Some kind of closure, though.
Yeah, it is.
That's that for that first point, I guess. Next point, Harry and Lupin discuss how the Death Eaters find out that he was the real Harry, and we were talking about this briefly last week. And Lupin even describes Expelliarmus as his signature move. And it was funny because Ben's always been calling it his signature move, but I guess Ben read it in the chapter. Yeah. I don't think he remembers. I don't think he actually remembers it was in the actual chapter. And then even after Lupin yells at Harry to stop doing it, Harry continues to use the spell through the rest of the book. Would it be fair to say that even though, you know, we might have thought that this was Joe's a fault in Joe's writing, maybe Harry just kept using it because he was so confident in this spell and he felt like this would get him through to the end? Because obviously it did. But why do you think he kept using it? Do you guys have any...
Isn't it more his... defiance and stubbornness rather than his sort of confidence in it? He won't, and his altruism as well, he won't kill people that are just there, you know. He's it does show something about his character. It also shows perhaps he doesn't have, I mean, he obviously does appreciate the implications of where he is and the war he's in, but perhaps he doesn't sort of, you know, like the adults are supposed to be more sensible, obviously, and they see that there's a need for killing in that, and obviously, you know, the Order of the Phoenix has to be against killing because it's Dumbledore's thing and he hated Horcruxes and that kind of thing, but for Harry to only use Expelliarmus and not Avada Kedavra seems like that is both, you know, defiance, and it shows him as a good character, but then it also shows him as a bit stubborn and perhaps immature, depending on how you look at it, because the time there was over for, you know, disarming. If you read that chapter, it's a family torn apart because these people argue about stuff they wouldn't normally argue about in the heat of the moment. And, you know, people are dying all over the place. So, I mean, like, I like to think if I was there with a wand, had magical powers inside a book, I'd Avada Kedavra people. But then, you know, it's a lot harder to do.
But he also has to mean it.
He has to mean it as well, exactly.
I think he believes that he can never do an unforgivable curse because he knows he'll never actually mean to kill someone.
Yeah, yeah. I agree completely. Like, in when he does the Imperius curse is completely different to Avada Kedavra because, you know, he obviously thinks that there is never any need to kill someone, whereas the Imperius curse had to be done in Gringotts, you know, when he was
I mean, the thing that got me about this was that even Lupin was berating him for doing this, and I thought that was sort of, that should have been a wake-up call to Harry. The Death Eaters know this is your spell and they're prepared for it, they're prepared to fight it
off. I think he was really upset with Lupin though, only the fact that, you know, he's seen Lupin as like his uncle sort of, and this is the first time that he's actually defiant to Harry.
Yeah.
He's kind of upset with Harry because he's not really... I don't really know. Why do you think he's a little upset with Harry in this chapter?
Just because I think he set himself up for possible death.
And he gave
his cover away. That was the most important thing.
It's also because Lupin, even though he was the best of friends with James, knew he was a flawed character, and he's seeing those flaws in Harry, and he knows, you know, those flaws, some of them aren't good, although James was altogether a nice guy. You know, he wasn't always nice, and he's seeing the defiance in Harry, and he likes it. You know, he wants him to improve for his father's sake and his parents' sake and Sirius's sake, I guess.
Yeah. And he even said that in this chapter. Lupin said, you remind me of your father, James. Yeah.
But I don't entirely think that I don't want to say anger, but, you know, the feelings he had towards Harry after he heard about Harry and his Expelliarmus spell, how I don't think it's directed mostly to Harry. I think it's also to himself, too. Like, he's putting a lot of blame on him for not informing Harry and helping him out.
All right, so Mad-Eye Moody is the one who dies in this chapter, we find out. What were you guys' initial reactions to his death? Were you surprised? Did you care?
Sorry, Matt.
Laura, your turn.
I was surprised, but I wasn't terribly upset by it, I guess. I mean, I always thought Mad-Eye was cool, but he wasn't the kind of character I'd cry over.
Yeah, I think he was a character we never, like, I never had a connection to. I didn't, you know, it was sad, and while you're reading their reactions, the character's reactions to his death, you feel for them, but it just didn't seem like that, all that of an important death to me.
I think it was just getting us ready for the bloodbath at the end of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always envisioned him dying in, like, a huge battle or something, because that's the kind of person that he is known for, is fighting in huge amounts and battling a lot of Death Eaters. I just thought that was kind of like a cheap shot for him to die.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. It wasn't his right time. Do you guys think he was... is it a stupid question to ask, or was he the right character to go?
I don't know. I think at this point in the series, a lot of it was about showing that random deaths happen in war. Like, there's not necessarily a reason for it. It just happens.
Yeah.
It unexpectedly.
Yeah. And also, in this chapter, they discuss whether or not Mundungus gave up their cover, or was he really just panicking? Do you think he was just panicking? Because, I mean, I think for anyone seeing Voldemort and, you know, he looked like he was ready to attack him, even posing as Harry, he would panic. Legitimately.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think Mundungus was a weak person to begin with.
I don't think he was a evil-minded character. Like, I think it takes a lot. And you can see straight away if a character's, you know, mentally evil. But he was just out for what he could get. Very, very self-indulgent. Very, very self... You know, specific. He only really cared for himself. That isn't to say he didn't care for other people, but I think, you know, seeing Voldemort, you got to appreciate the circumstances. Seeing him is basically instant death. You know, you can't fight Voldemort. Right. It's futile. You know, it's like, even though it's anyone who goes against Voldemort will basically die. It's like if you watch The Matrix, when you fight an agent, unless you're Neo, you will die. You know, and it's kind of like that. So I don't think he gave up their cover, and I think it was literally just a spur of the moment, flight or fight. His adrenaline didn't want to come out, and he just, you know, disappeared. Like I think a lot more people...
Well, and you know he's also loyal, too.
Exactly,
because
he
was in the Hog's Head looking over Harry in Book 5.
Exactly, yeah.
So...
He isn't a bad person.
He's not stupid.
Exactly. And I think more people would get into street fights if they knew that they could just disappear in the blink of an eye. They'd sort of, swear at someone, and then as soon as they came over to them, they'd just pop, and they'd appear in Siberia. Yep. So,
And who knows?
Go on, sorry.
Maybe when he apparated, it was pretty much like... an instinct or something that he did.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, once you see Voldemort... I mean... My first instinct would be to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, I really don't think magic would hold up in the real world. If you think about bringing magic to today's society, I think the world would just be a mess.
Oh, it would be completely.
And the reason I say that, be there.
The reason I say that is because of Jamie's point about people just apparating after they pick a fight. You know, this world would be so bad. Yeah. Let's move on now to Chapter 6, The Ghoul in Pajamas. Laura, you want to handle this one?
This is the chapter in which the Weasleys are busy.
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry.
Are you trying to interrupt me now?
I forgot. No, sorry. I forgot song memory and favorite lines. All right, so before we move on to the next chapter, we're going to start a new thing now. Every time there is a death in the book, we're going to play a clip of a song in their memory. And the song will relate to the character. This was actually Micah's idea, so props to him. So now we take a moment to remember Mad-Eye Moody.
Godspeed, Maddo.
I'm crying a bit. It's kind of sad.
I think that's a nice word, Godspeed. It's so underused nowadays as well.
Anyway, also, favorite lines from this chapter. I just put in one. What was the last word Albus Dumbledore spoke to the pair of us? Weasley said to Kingsley, right? Or was it vice versa?
It was Kingsley to Lupin.
Yeah, my bad. Harry is the best hope we have. Trust him.
Aww. That is nice.
That was on page 72.
You'd think he'd say goodbye, last of all, though.
Yeah.
Harry's the best hope we have. Trust him, right? I'm off to die. See you guys later. Yeah.
Oh, man. That was just a shame. And too bad Molly didn't listen to that quote.
Yeah.
I would think Molly was in the room, because then Molly raises the fuss about... Which leads us into Chapter 6, The Ghoul in Pajamas.
The Ghoul... I keep hearing you say
The Golden Pajamas.
In Pajamas.
Matt, yeah. That's the sequel to The Golden Pajamas.
Hey, you know, good thing you brought that up, Jamie. Can we just do a quick Golden Compass review before we get to the next chapter?
Yeah, but don't spoil it, please.
No, we won't. It was okay.
Oh my god, did you see this one part in the film? It was so
I heard
good.
It was awful. Like, in terms of... of being an adaptation. I haven't seen it yet, but I've read the book, and the book is fantastic. Yeah. The movie, I heard they took out every single bit of religious symbolism or any...
Yes.
Yeah, they did.
It's ridiculous.
They did.
It is.
And I got an email saying they took out the last 10 chapters of the book.
What?
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah, they took out like a huge... They filmed it and everything. But what they're going to do is, kind of like with the Two Towers in Lord of the Rings, is they're going to... They took the ending from the first movie, and they're going to put it in the beginning
of the second one. Where did
if there's
Golden
a second
Compass
one.
End?
It's a toss-up right now if there's even going to be a second film. So pretty much they just took out the ending and then just threw it away.
Where did the film end?
The film ended with... I don't want to spoil it, because Jamie's going to watch it.
It ended with a long speech.
It ended with the blimp.
What?
Right after the big fight.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No.
That's all I have to say.
No.
Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty much everyone's reaction, too, when they saw it.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah, it was a bit of a letdown. But, I do have to say the polar bear fights were very cool, though. The polar bears in general were very cool.
Well, I like... my favorite are just the demons in general. I just thought that whole concept was perfect.
Okay, and can some listeners please correct me if I'm wrong, but I was almost positive that in the book it's pronounced like Damon, not demon.
They say demons in the movie.
Why would you call them demons?
So,
they're so worried about all of the...
Because they say it in the movie.
No, but I don't think that's how it's said in the book. But...
I don't know. The A and the E are connected, so isn't it like its own letter?
I thought it was Damon. It's like, but I know that
it's like, dude,
they're so concerned about fundamentalists you know, boycotting this film, and yet they call these extensions of people's souls demons.
Yeah, he's funny.
Maybe it's just the American version of Damon.
Maybe. That could be it.
Damon. Isn't he a CDS staff member?
Oh!
Nah,
I wonder what Damon's Damon is.
It's a smaller version of himself. Damon Damon. Encyclopedia. That's what it should be.
Well, let's move on now. Chapter 6, Laura. Sorry, I want to interrupt you this time.
Okay.
That was the Matt and Andrew movie review. Ho! Back
Yay.
To you.
Ooh.
Okay, so this is Chapter 6, The Ghoul in Pajamas. It's a chapter where the Weasleys are busy with wedding preparations for Bill and Floor. And throughout the entire chapter, Mrs. Weasley is completely annoying with her attempts to distract Harry, Ron, and Hermione from doing their mission. And we also begin learning some of the basics about Horcruxes. So, let's see. The first thing we have here is Mrs. Weasley's motherly concern with what she's, you know, she's, throughout the entire chapter, she barges in on them during the few moments the trio have together to try and discuss what they're going to do. There's one point where they're in Ron's room, and she comes in and tells them to go sort presents or something. They're also outside at one point, and she interrupts them. So, my question is Mrs. Weasley right to let her motherly concern get in the way of what they need to do?
Yes.
She doesn't know what they need to do.
Well, that's all.
But,
yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of this kind of relates to, and I don't want to get too opinionated here, but like when there is a war going on, people who are for the war tend to say, well, it's something that is worth dying for. But people who are against
Isn't
it.
Isn't that worth fighting for?
People who are against it say, it's not worth dying for. And I think it's, I don't know. I see you.
She's also in a state of shock over her son, too. She doesn't want anything else to happen.
Yeah.
Pretty much her adrenaline's, like, running, and her motherly instinct has just taken over all her actions, too.
I think it's quite... I mean, like, when we were... Andrew, do you remember this? We were in... I can't remember where we were, but we were sitting after a podcast on the live tour, and this lady came up to us and just said, never... underestimate the power of a mother's love. So
yes.
I'd say it's quite tough for us to say, you know, should she let this get in the way or shouldn't she? I don't think it's probably not possible for her to stop, you know, it getting in the way. Like, you know, a parent's concern for their children often overrides any, you know, instinct or anything like that. So saying that, it's probably not, you know, it's probably a hindrance for Harry, Ron, and Hermione to do it, but it's something that has to be dealt with and dealt with accordingly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Mrs. Weasley is nothing but concerned. I mean, when you think about it, they're going out to fight Voldemort. I mean, she knows that's what they're doing, or at
least
what their mission relates to. So it's very scary for a mother, and yeah, what it comes down to is it's the mother's protection. But there's nothing she can do about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, still, I think we can all pretty much figure that our mother would do the same thing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me give you sort of an example.
Okay.
I've said on the show, maybe, or maybe at least on Pickle Pack, that I think it was just Pickle Pack, that I plan on moving to California. My mom hates this idea. However, she knows that I'm going to do it no matter what. And one time she even said to me, I don't really want you to do it, but I know I can't stop you. So I view this. That's basically the same way Mrs.
Don't laugh at you. That's lovely.
I'm not laughing. That's very nice. I know.
My mother would never do that.
What's that,
my
Laura?
Mom kind of did the same thing when I moved to Maryland.
Yeah. It's sad for a mom because she's losing her child. And when you think about it, if I was in her position and like, or even say my brother or my sister decided to leave, at first I'd be like, good riddance. But then after a while, I'd realize, okay, I probably do miss them a little bit.
But you know, I think your mother will see the whole gist of it. I mean, she's not really losing a son. She's gaining a bedroom.
And the recording studio as well. So
I'm bringing all this
recording stuff. She can start her own podcast.
Anyway, so yeah, I think that sums up that point. And I think that woman said it to us best on the tour that never underestimate the power of mother's love.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that kind of ties into the next point about how a lot of the times parents kind of struggle with the idea of their kids growing up. You know, in Order of the Phoenix, she continually insists that Harry's too young to be told any of what the Order's doing. And even in this chapter, she says about Dumbledore that probably he was telling you to do something he wanted done, and you took it to mean that he wanted you to do it. So we see that even though she has a great deal of love for him, she still treats him like a kid. Like he couldn't possibly understand the, you know,
but isn't she more trying to use any excuse to get them to not do
it? Oh, I think
so. It's, you know, logic just completely goes out of the window when it comes to that. You know, and although she can be annoying, and to me, she's one of the most annoying characters in that I don't like how she interferes in everything. Like, there are things you have to do alone. There are things you don't, you know, do with your mother's guidance and stuff like that. And although she is caring and means well, and she's one of those characters that does only have a good heart, you know.
Well, weren't you a little annoyed in book five in that chapter when she says, he's as good as my son?
That was just... hated that. Sirius, I feel so sorry for Sirius then. I really did. I hated it. Matt, she needed a punch then. Between the eyes. Like the Carol scenes.
Or at least a slap
She needed...
A slap, yeah. A punch is
just to let her know who's boss, you know?
Just a bit. That's right.
Just so she could pull her tail between her legs.
I mean, exactly, I understand completely where she's coming from. Like, if I had a kid, I would never want them to go do that. But that one scene where she pulls Harry into a sort of side room, you know, under the pretense of getting him to identify a sock, and then she immediately starts hammering on him. So why are you dropping out of school? And it's like... Because you just know how much he has to do, and he doesn't need her to be guilting him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's but she's just she means well, but her methods are occasionally thrown into question. You know.
Well, she has to have an extreme emotion of something. I mean, every character has to have something. She can't be perfect.
No, she can't. She can't.
All right. Well, the next thing we see in this chapter, and I think a lot of shippers were really happy about this, was a lot of tension between Harry and Ginny and Ron and Hermione. One of the first things we see in the chapter is when Harry and Ginny are setting the table together. They have a moment of unspoken understanding where they both remember times when they were together. And it seems weird to me, and I'm like reading these books, and it seems weird to me that Ron seems to be the only one in their entire family who knows or acknowledges that Harry and Ginny were together. Like, it just, you would think that other characters would mention it, but I feel like we never see that, and I wonder if the family knew.
Well, I'm pretty positive that Fred and George may know a little something, and of course we know Hermione knows, but I think Ron is one of those characters who can't really keep his feelings to himself very much, especially when it comes to his little sister, because I think he's been the most protective of Ginny.
Oh, for sure.
Then
it just seemed weird to me because there's, you know, one point where they're all having dinner together and Harry says that he found himself scrunched beside Ginny. And I'm just thinking of Mrs. Weasley, who is constantly the perfectionist when it comes to meal plans or any sort of party situation. And there Harry and Ginny are sitting by each other. And you would think she would realize how incredibly awkward that would be. Yeah. So,
I don't think Mrs. Weasley knew.
You don't think she knew they were dating?
Sometimes parents are really oblivious to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially with all the things that are going on. I think she's pretty much, if she did have any assumption, I think that's being put on the back burner at this point.
And also, Fred and George have a great deal of respect for Harry. I don't think they'd be the kind of people to joke about something as serious as that in front of him, you know, because
if anything, I think he'd be pushing for it.
Exactly,
Yeah, I just didn't know if maybe, like, it was possible that Mrs. Weasley was trying to get them back together, or, you know, maybe.
I think people knew it was sort of an awkward situation, so nobody really wanted to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Mrs. Weasley knew that Ginny had a crush. I mean, she knew she had a crush on him in the beginning. So
even when we look back to Chamber of Secrets, even the movie when they dropped in those little hints, which was nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a side note, did you guys, when you were reading the beginning of the series, think that Harry and Ginny were going to get together?
Beginning of the series,
yeah, like in books two and three.
I can't remember that.
I never thought of it at all, to be perfectly honest. Not until really the fifth book did I actually think, oh, that could happen. But earlier in the series, I was just like, I thought she was just this cute little girl who had a crush on Harry.
Friend,
yeah,
yeah,
I didn't think of it that way at all.
If anything, the thought would have been really just in and out really quickly whenever they mentioned that Ginny was dating
this
guy and this other guy.
What? In and out very quickly. Harry's got more.
I made no.
Jamie, you made
I
it
am
disgusting.
Not judging. I know.
Huh? You made
that
it
was
disgusting.
Well,
he
maybe,
did catch
maybe.
The only time I didn't have anything behind it. It was like the only time.
That's funny. Terrible. I think it also depends on what age you're reading the book at.
Yeah,
like,
that's
at our
true.
Age, I don't think when we were reading like Sorcerer's Stone through Goblet of Fire. Goblet of Fire came out in 2000. We were
11.
Like 11. Yeah, we weren't thinking about relationships. I mean, at least I wasn't. I wasn't. Hell, I'm still not thinking about relationships. I mean, you know, maybe once I hit puberty or something. But it's just
when your voice cracks.
Why are we stopping this show? It's so much fun. Let's continue.
Thousand more will.
So, did anyone else want to slap Ron in this chapter? I just wanted to beat him.
Why?
Okay, because as a girl,
woman.
I'm reading this, and I see these attempts to show that he knows how to talk to girls now or whatever, but we all know he got them from a book. He admits it to Harry later. And it just seems so fake. He's not actually trying to comfort her because he completely identifies with how she feels. He's trying to comfort her to make her like him. And I'm just...
Well, yeah.
But she moves in mysterious ways. And it's,
no.
And
that's not how it works. That's not how it works. You are supposed to sympathize.
No. He has come to terms with the fact that he has no game. He knows that. He has come to terms with that.
And Laura.
And he knows he likes Hermione. And he's actually come to terms with that, too. So now he's trying to get with her.
It's all he can
Why
do.
Why are you trying to take it away from him?
Because he's not trying to... it's so annoying because he should sympathize with her just because he sympathizes with her. But he only does it to try and get with her. And it's not right. I don't feel like it's until halfway through the book where he really understands. And at this
point...
You know you
mean,
like
though.
It.
No.
It's all he can do, though. It's all he knows what to do. It's not his fault. It's just...
Because he's pathetic.
You know...
But you know that he's going to come through in the end anyway. So that...
But still, it makes me want to smack
him.
His
brother's
okay, let me just say something. You guys don't understand, but girls who are listening,
no,
they
I don't
get
think
it.
You understand,
they get
Laura.
It.
No, girls you're talking to three guys about a guy's actions. Where
there has always been at least one or two times in a man's life where he has had help from somebody else with advice.
Yeah,
this doesn't come naturally to guys.
No, because you're all okay.
Game is not natural. Yeah, you learn game.
Most guys wouldn't even approach a woman until they were like
pretty
25.
Sure.
Yeah, until they're
pretty sure of
the height of their
well.
Their sexual peak, so
yeah.
to speak.
Whatever. I don't like it. But there was this...
Stop reading those novels.
Yeah.
What novels?
It's putting dirty thoughts in your head. They're all lies. We're not all like that.
What? Okay, I'm not going to pretend to understand. Anyway, there was one quote that I thought was pretty funny where it was talking about Ron went over to comfort Hermione again, and he kind of glared at Harry after Harry said something that made her cry, and it said, Harry could not think of anything to say, not least because it was highly unusual for Ron to be teaching anyone else tact. And I think that's just another way to show that Ron is tactless and he's a prat.
Oh, no, but he's not tactless. Well, no, he is, but he isn't a prat. He's just, he doesn't know what to do. It's not malicious, you know? It's just how he acts. He doesn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
You have to read the side notes, Laura.
No.
Yeah, the footnotes. Haven't you read them yet?
Really? There are footnotes in this series, Jamie?
Yeah. It's in a size 1 Times New Romans. So you got to really... Yeah. Squint.
But yeah, I think Ron he fails in this chapter, pretty much.
But he gets rewarded handsomely in the end.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't everyone in the end of a fairy tale?
I don't know.
Wow.
Bellatrix didn't really win very much.
All the good guys. Obviously not everyone.
That's true, like, they did, yeah.
Like Mad-Eye
and Lupin.
Alright,
Hedwig. Dobby.
Alright, you win.
Okay. And we see a good chunk of this chapter dedicated to the measures taken for the beginning of the Horcrux hunt. And one of the saddest things, I think, about reading this chapter was learning that Hermione had modified her parents' memories. So they didn't remember they had a daughter. And, in fact, they thought they were completely different people and moved to Australia. That, yeah. Can you imagine having to do something like that? I mean,
well, do you think that was actually kind of like a nod to all the fans in Australia, since there's a huge fan out there?
Maybe. You know what I was thinking, though? I was thinking there must be holes in this plan. Now that her parents don't think she has a child, what if they decided to have another child? Or what if they decided to adopt a child or something? Then they're stuck
with
it.
She'd have a sister, then.
But it doesn't matter, because then once Hermione took her parents out of the charm, then they'd be like, what's this other
kid? They're going to be pissed at her anyway. They wouldn't. I mean, when she brings them back out, she's going to have to explain what she did.
They'll probably kill
her.
Huh? They could just. She could probably just redo their memory and just rename the kid if they name their first daughter or their second daughter, so to speak.
Yeah,
Hermione.
No, they would name her Emma, I think.
Yeah. No, but they I'm sure she can change them. I mean, it does kind of complicate sort of parent, you know, offspring relations when the offspring can change the memories of the parents. Like if they get grounded and they perform a memory charm, so they forgot they did, and actually it's their birthday and they were feeling very generous that day, so they give them lots of money. You know, it's like, it does change how things work when they can do that.
Right.
But it just shows how committed she is to Harry's quest, and
absolutely.
And you know,
I thought one of the most
she's been the most loyal in the entire book.
She really has
for Harry.
Yeah,
she's been more than Ron.
Yeah, we can't even say Ron's been loyal now because of that whole thing. And later in the book, I think one of the most badass things she says in this chapter was when she says she's ready to leave at a moment's notice. I was like, that's so cool, because she could just pick up and go. I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I feel like it's just another way of showing that Ron is like the last of them to grow up, and it bothers me so much. Because it's just his way of helping Harry just seems so lame in comparison to Hermione's, when he disguises the ghoul in the attic to look like him and just puts it in his bed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an embarrassing illness or whatever, because they talked about it in the fifth book. And apparently Ron was really embarrassed that anyone would think he had it. But I just don't think that really compares to making your parents forget they had you, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it is a really good plan. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good idea, and as long as Mr. Weasley's down with it, you know, they could easily make that work.
It's weird that that's, you know, quite a minor point in the chapter as a whole. Yet it's the chapter title, which again sort of illustrates your point that it is Ron growing up finally and knowing what has to be done. So Joe makes it the object of the chapter, even though it's just a tiny bit at the end.
So another thing, okay, and we've talked about this before, where Hermione talks about how she just accio'd the Horcrux books out of Dumbledore's office. Haven't we talked about this before?
Yeah, you'd think he'd have put some type of charm on it.
You're just sitting there imagining her going, accio Horcrux books, and it's like, no.
Yeah, that was pretty much a scapegoat.
That's one of those flaws in the magical system that I don't really get. It's sort of like being able to apparate, you know, on a moment's notice and to get out of a sticky situation. But
well, didn't all the charms break after Dumbledore died too? The ones that he made.
Oh, that's true. That's probably why why she could do it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, but wasn't there another point earlier in this book where someone accio'd a person?
That was like,
oh, wasn't it Hedwig?
You're talking to someone and suddenly you fly out of the window and go to someone's wand.
What's up?
Yeah. No, but seriously, earlier in this book, didn't they say accio Hedwig?
I don't remember.
Oh no, that was the cage. Didn't Harry need her to be near him, so he accio'd the
Arcea, so. But I thought that he was trying to find a dead body. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, that's another flaw. Like, I could be sitting here recording right now, and then Jamie could just go from England, accio Andrew, and I come flying.
That'd be so cool.
I wonder what the rules.
How long would it take?
Yeah. No, because, like, allies.
Isn't it called,
so
I think
money.
It's called apparating, isn't it?
Well, no, but, okay, but, you know, they also do the accio thing a lot. So, I'm saying Jamie could pull me across the world right now if he had magical powers.
And it would cost a lot less than British Airways.
It's only 2 cents a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. So they started talking a little bit about Horcruxes from what Hermione had read in the books. And what I found interesting was that there's actually potential to reverse the damage done to your soul if you feel remorse for what you've done.
That's a very weird point. Yeah, it's very... How... I mean, like, do you think you... You're like, oh, damn, I shouldn't have done that. And then your soul comes back to you. Or you have to go through a stage. And then do you have to cast a spell to do it for it to...
I don't know.
It just seems like... The word split a soul seems to imply you can't put it together. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like a temporary thing. Like, even if you stick it back together, it's still held by glue or, you know, magical glue. So, I mean, obviously, it isn't a physical object, but, you know, it's like, can you put something together that's been torn? Even if you break a china implement, if you glue it back together, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, Hermione says that the pain of feeling the remorse can kill you. It can just completely destroy you. So it almost seems like it's a very small chance that you can actually repair your soul.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what exactly she means when she says remorse. Like, do you have to cry?
Well, if you go back to Dumbledore's point that killing is not as easy as the innocent believe, he's saying that you have to be of a certain mindset to kill someone. Like, not everyone can kill someone. And it seems that, you know, there are very few people who are capable of both killing and remorse. So it's like killing... If you can kill, perhaps you can't unkill, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just seems like very, very few people, like a very minor percentage of the population can kill and then feel the same feelings as someone who can't kill. If you take Dumbledore's thing to be gospel, but I agree. It seems very unlikely. But in the case of Voldemort, she said he's completely beyond repair. You know, his soul's gone basically.
Yeah,
and it won't come back.
Yeah,
and I don't think Voldemort would be feeling remorse at any point.
No,
so I don't think.
I mean, Harry tries to make him feel remorse at the end of the book.
Yeah.
But it's just weird to me because, like, you compare it to our society, and generally, people who kill are not regarded as people who can be, you know, rehabilitated.
But that's so weird because there are situations, I personally think, there are certain situations that sort of, there are situations that people find themselves in very, very rarely that, like, self-defense, you know, if someone attacks you...
Oh, I mean, I'm talking about cold-blooded killers.
Oh, right, I see what you mean.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. But, like, people who, you know, I mean, I think everyone's capable of killing. Not killing, but, you know, well, yes, killing. Sorry, not murdering. People are capable of killing when it comes to a loved one or self-defense or something like that. Very, very rarely. And they have to be put under significant and, you know, indescribable strain. But they can feel remorse, obviously, and guilt, but someone like Voldemort, a cold-blooded sociopath, can't really think, well, shouldn't have killed all those people,
damn,
you know.
But I guess the difference is, here, the person who killed out of self-defense isn't going to use it to make a Horcrux.
No, that's very true.
You really only assume that the people who are going to make Horcruxes are people who are cold-blooded killers, and it's just weird that there's even the remotest possibility that they could come back from that.
I highly doubt Voldemort's going to stop and say, probably shouldn't have killed all those people.
No, probably not. We also learn that as long as the device that a Horcrux is living in is still intact, it can actually flit in and out of the device, like, you know, with people who get too close to it. The best example before this point in the series is Ginny and Riddle's diary, which, you know, answers a lot about what exactly happened there. Because at the time when we were reading Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, it's not very clear how this diary came to be. All we know is that Riddle says he, you know, put his 16-year-old self into it. And that's all we really know. So I think this clarifies a lot. And also later in the book, we see the trio wearing the locket Horcrux around their necks, and it's, like, falling right over their hearts. So it seems like, you know, that's another way to say that they made themselves vulnerable to the Horcrux by doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
And we've got just a couple of favorite lines here from the chapter. Both are from Ron. The first one says, "And are they getting married in my bedroom?" asked Ron furiously. "No! So why in the name of Merlin's saggy left?"
Whoa!
And then he gets cut off.
That sounds like something I would say. Like, that's a good point. Like, the mother, you know how your mom always tells you to clean your room? Like, say, like, you're having family over Thanksgiving. Like, clean your room.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody's coming up here, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah, next time I get mad at my mom, I'm going to ask her why in the name of Merlin Sagula, why I have to do that.
And the other one?
The other one is, oh, well, lucky we've got such a large supply of basilisk fangs then, said Ron. I was wondering what we were going to do with that.
That is funny. That is funny. I like that one.
Yeah.
Joe's funny. Like, Joe is legitimately funny.
She is, yeah. I like, her sarcasm is very good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad at all.
I love it.
We have one email concerning chapter by chapter this week. This comes from Shannon, 18, of Novi, Michigan. She writes, throughout this last book, there are a few times, starting with chapter 5, that we think Hagrid has been killed. J.K. Rowling has said many times that most people asked her not to kill Hagrid, and so I assume this was just to keep us on our toes, to tease us. And while this has nothing to do as much with the chapter itself, I was wondering what you guys thought about this plea from fans. What do you think Hagrid was the one character that the majority begged her not to kill? I think this is an interesting question, because leading up to Book 7, everyone was worried that Hagrid was going to bite the dust, because he's always that, you know, he's a big, strong character, but at the same time, he's innocent. He could get killed.
You
guys agree?
He's so tough.
In Chapter 5, Harry, once he wakes up, he immediately starts looking for Hagrid, and he tries to push Ted Tonks out of the way. He's like, get out of the way, I need to see Hagrid. He wouldn't believe that Hagrid was okay until he saw him. So, you know, it just shows that how attached Harry is to Hagrid and how important Hagrid is in Harry's life. And he was the first magical character or magical person in the magical world that he met. And Hagrid had such a huge influence. And, you know, it's still a far way away, but that chapter where Hagrid carries Harry's supposedly dead body out is just fantastic. So do you guys think that, you know, there is a big fan connection with Hagrid?
There is. He is a completely special person in Harry's life. You know, he was the person who introduced him to the magical world. He's the one who trusted. He's the one who he knows is always going to be there. Like, a different one to Hermione and Ron. You know, they're friends. Hagrid is a kind of friend and father figure, which I think Harry likes, because he's had some type of trouble with father figures. Like, Sirius hasn't always you know, told him what he wants, you know. Dumbledore didn't always listen to him. He still loved these people, but it was a completely different type, whereas Hagrid is both a friend and a mentor, so there is a special connection, I think.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree completely.
All right, well, let's move on now to quote quiz. So, Jamie, we're doing this new thing where we quiz the listeners on a quote in the upcoming chapter. So, this is just a little one. This comes in Chapter 7. The quote is, I shall tell you that when we are somewhere more private.
Which book is that from?
And who's he talking to? Oh, it's not a Harry Potter book. Guys, grow up.
It's a fan fiction.
Grow up. You guys are immature. Hey, here's something we haven't done in a while. Jamie's British joke of the day.
Of the three months. So it better be good. Okay. Well, there's this couple, okay?
Yeah.
Bob and Judy. Okay. And Bob is severely in trouble because he forgot his wedding anniversary, and his wife was really annoyed, very, very annoyed. And she told him, tomorrow morning, no excuses, I expect to find a gift in the driveway that goes from 0 to 200 in 6 seconds, and it better be there. So the next morning, he went up early and left for work, and his wife woke up. She looked out of the window, and sure enough, there was a box gift-wrapped in the middle of the driveway. So she thought, wow, he's made up for it. I shouldn't be angry with him anymore. And she got up, put on her robe, ran out to the driveway, brought the box back in the house and undid it. And she opened it to find a brand new bathroom scale.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
It took 6 seconds for that little thing to reach up to 200, though? It's pretty bad.
Well, it was probably going back and forth because it went all the way over.
That's true.
It probably took 6 seconds to stop.
That's funny, Jamie. That's a good one to come back with.
That's funny.
I was expecting you for to say like rocket ship or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say something like a snake or something.
Snake can't go 200 under 6 seconds. That's funny. That's good. Well, since this week is our holiday show, Stephanie 15 of California wrote in with a little Christmas contribution, like I asked.
Ode to MuggleCast. It's raining here at my home on a dreary afternoon. I'm really bored out of my mind, but I know just what to do.
Kick my brother off the computer and plug my blue iPod in. Download MuggleCast to have some fun, because it always makes me grin.
Micah, Jamie, Laura, Ben are always good for laughs. Andrew, Mike, Matt, Eric, Kevin, they're one of the best staffs.
Amazing, wonderful, incredibly insightful. What an extraordinary group. They warm my heart and my ears like a bowl of chicken soup.
No! It's much too soon. I haven't met them yet. But if they do go soon in April, then they owe me a debt.
Allegedly. 2 years of my life will be ending as well, for I've listened all the while. Arguments, jokes, debates, and tears, but still all ending with a smile.
Until that day, Merry Christmas to you, to the casters, and the million fans. May we all be blessed with people like you, even after the hourglass runs out of sand.
Aw, that was so sweet.
Aww.
Thanks,
Aww,
Stephanie.
Thank you.
That was very nice. What's everyone
doing?
It was
kind of sad.
It was kind of sad, but it was bittersweet. What's everyone doing for Christmas this year?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to be, I'll be at home opening presents.
Okay, I'm going to go see Sweeney Todd with my family on Christmas Eve, and then I'm going to open presents.
Oh, that's great. And I'm going to be just here at home with the family. And then the day after
that... Yeah, this is going to be a weird Christmas.
Why?
For a lot of us.
Why?
Because the day after, we're not going to be home.
Oh, no. Jamie and I are experts in this field. We know what it's like to leave the day after Christmas.
Or Christmas Day,
Oh, Christmas Day. Yeah, Jamie's leaving Christmas Day.
I tell you, I had to use all of my skills, convincing skills, to convince my mum to drive me to the airport on Christmas Day at 5 a.m. Actually, I did. That's not true. She didn't mind at all. So it's
wait,
fine.
5 a.m. Christmas Day you're leaving?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, because my flight leaves at 11:15 a.m. from Heathrow. So I have to get there early, then check in.
Wait, is she actually driving you to Heathrow?
No, I'm walking.
No, I mean, are you taking a train?
Yeah, no, she's driving me. Well, no, I'm driving there and she's driving back.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I'm still convincing my mom to let me go.
Aww.
And this is the day after Christmas.
Well, your flight's already booked, so I guess, you know, that's one talking point. Alright, yeah, so we're going to have some fun. So I think that's it for this episode of MuggleCast. We got to remind everyone about our contact information. Laura, what's the P.O. Box?
It's P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form, or you can contact any one of us at our first name at staff.mugglenet.com, exception of Matt. He's Matthew B. at staff.mugglenet.com. You can also visit the site for community outlets such as the MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing. I think that just about does it for us this week. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Thanks,
Merry
everyone,
Christmas.
For listening. Merry Christmas to all. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho.
Happy Carol.
Happy Hanukkah. Yes, we got to get through them all, or otherwise people...
Even though Hanukkah's already over,
well,
but we hope you had a happy
Kwanzaa.
Hanukkah.
Happy 25th of December.
Yes. Happy holidays, ladies and gentlemen.
Boys and girls.
In the words of Micah Tannenbaum for episode 124, Bah Humbug.
Bah Humbug.
We'll see everyone next week for our New Year's special, episode 126. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.